You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
Welcome in to the Rockies Insider. It's Patrick Lyons, your Rockies Insider, bringing you a Giants series preview. It starts today on Tuesday. I got to get you caught up on all the Ryan Ritter business from over the weekend. I touched on it yesterday, but you need more. I've got more news and notes from inside the Rockies clubhouse, several other things. Let's get things kickstarted with Ryan Ritter. Everyone is excited that this young man finally got his opportunity. Felt long overdue, but comes at the right time. He even spoke before Friday's game that it just requires patience. That's what Major League Baseball can be, whether it is a plate appearance, being patient, waiting for your pitch, taking your walk. If you're not seeing anything in the zone, don't force anything. You got to be patient all the way to getting that first opportunity. And, you know, had Ezekiel Tovar not gotten hurt, would that have certainly, you know, change things differently? And would he still be down in AAA even after winning the Player of the Week award for the last three consecutive weeks, Mays Pacific Coast League Player of the Month, and the Organizational Player of the Month for the Rockies? Would that have changed if Tovar was still active? Look, we don't live in that timeline, so it doesn't matter much. I do think that he might still be down there. They might have tried to find a way to make some room for him just a little bit, because all along with Ritter, and I think a lot of the players that the Rockies have been calling up, they're not going to call them up unless there is a spot for them in the starting lineup, because it does not benefit your big leaguers or your prospects to come up into the big leagues and sit on the bench. Unless that is their role, unless there is some kind of transition, unless they are in the middle to the end of their career, not being a starting player just doesn't work out. So they need those reps. They need those repetitions. And, you know, even after Orlando Arcia was signed, a great question by my friend Kevin Henry about that. And Ritter just, you know, didn't really bat an eye, saying like, yeah, no, just they made that move for a guy that plays at my position, but I still got to go out, work on my own development, and make enough noise to give myself that opportunity. I got to kick in the door maybe just a little bit. And I think that's a good quality to have. Sure, plenty of fans would probably say, oh, why do these guys have to kick the door down in order to be welcomed in? Sometimes that's how you get in, is to show that you are relentless and not willing to just give up and roll over. You continue to keep fighting, and you say, you know what? 3 weeks of being the best player in AAA? Yeah, okay, I think you're ready. So gets the start on Saturday. It was awesome to see that. Had about 20 friends and family who were able to come in on Friday. I think he got the word on Wednesday that he was going to get promoted. One of his coaches gave him a sheet that he thought it was essentially the award, his certificate saying, you are the Pacific Coast League Player of the Month for May. And it said, no, hey, you're going to the show, and you're going to debut, and you're going to play on Friday against the New York Mets. So that was awesome. There was about 30, I think, from his family at the game on Saturday. And one of the funny things, I got this further down in my notes, but I might as well say it right now, is this also was the debut for one of the umpires, Willie Trainer. Friday was his first ever game in the majors, and then on Sunday, he got the start behind the plate. Starter, like, you know, umpire start, but he began the game as the umpire behind the plate. Punched out Francisco Lindor, the first ever guy coming to plate. Boom, punched him out on a pitch that was in the zone. So good call by Willie Trainer. But I asked Ryan Ritter about this, that did he know that Willie Trainer was also making his major league debut? Was there anything? And he thought about it, and he said, yeah, I think it was Juan Soto who, when he got the second base at one point, said, hey, both you guys are making your debut. And Ritter thought, oh, well, that's awesome. But the guy, the umpire, Willie Trainer, looked familiar to him as if it was someone he had seen on TV. That's where he thought he knew the umpire from, not from the Pacific Coast League or the Eastern League. I don't know what Trainer's trajectory was exactly, like how he got to the majors. Where did they, you know, bump into one another? My guess is the Pacific Coast League, but regardless, it was a face that Ryan Ritter was familiar with, but he thought it was because, hey, this guy's just must be one of the best umps that I see all the time. And no, they actually had run into each other in the minors. So that was a cool little thing. Ritter made the final out of the first inning, where it was a ball that Estrada tossed to him, and he touched second base. And then as he's going into the dugout, chucks the ball, gets rid of the first baseball, the first ball he had ever touched in a big league game for his first out. Throws it into the stands without a care. It hits nobody. He threw it into a spot where there wasn't anybody standing. So, okay, rookie, we'll get that out of the way. Someone picked the ball up, and I don't know if they had any idea what they were holding in their hand. Now, again, if Ryan Ritter becomes a Hall of Famer, okay, now that ball is worth something. It's more sentimental than anything. It's just kind of funny to think this guy finally makes his big league debut. He very much can be something for this team. Very well may be at the start of a very long career. And you've got a nice little heirloom there, but you probably don't even realize it because it was just a souvenir that I got chucked to me. So I thought that was pretty interesting. His second at bat, got that triple for his base hit, and the fans were chanting, "Ritter! Ritter." I'm not sure if it was his family chanting that or if it was the crowd altogether, but it was a cool thing to see number 8 doing that. Now he has a number 47 necklace on, and that's his dad's number when he played in college, and Juan Mejia wears the number 47, so it does sound like maybe in the offseason that'll be something that Ritter is able to get because he wants to wear 47. I think some of his family even had Rockies jerseys that said Ritter 47. Like, it's a foregone conclusion. Who's going to want the number 47? That 47 is not a thing, but it is for the Ritter family, and yet doesn't get it. Number 8 looks good on his back, though. I will say that. So the triple that he gets, diving in head first, pumped about it. First player in Rockies history to triple in his first hit in his major league debut. Cool thing for Ryan Ritter and his entire family. Ended up batting second on Sunday, got his first career RBI. Another moment where I'm not sure if he's going to get the ball from that. The ball came into the dugout, and one of the security guards that I talk to sometimes before games, who's on the ball literally and figuratively, he made sure to get that ball, secure it. I think he gave it to one of the authenticators that's in the visiting dugout, so hopefully I'll have to follow up on that if Ritter is going to get the baseball from his first ever career RBI. Unfortunately, coming in that 13-5 loss on Sunday to the Mets. And now the Rockies, frankly, they've got too many players with similar names on the roster now. You've got Ryan Ritter and Ryan Rollison. Two Ryan R's. Too many. Two Kyle F's. Kyle Freeland. Kyle Farmer. We've got two Tylers. Kinley and Freeman. You want to throw coaches in there? You got Jordan Beck and Jordan Pacek. Oh. So, hey, Rockies, let's diversify the names a little bit so we don't have to have code names for everyone to make sure that we're all on the same page. Of course, I am kidding. But Friday was the day that they made that announcement that Ritter was going to get the promotion from AAA. And surprising that not just that Braxton Fulford was called up from AAA, he's doing his job down there, more of a defensive-minded catcher. I spoke with him on Sunday before the game for an article I'm writing about Hunter Goodman. It's good catching up with Fulford. And it was more that Jacob Stallings out. Unconditional release for Jacob Stallings. Schaefer saying point blank, look, we're making a push to go younger, so why not? And, you know, I think Stallings was a lot more beat up than I think people probably realize. That's his job. He's going to go out there and grind. But you really saw how much he was depleted and what he was able to do at the plate defensively, you know, some lapses. And just time to go with the younger body in Braxton Fulford. And you still have Drew Romo in AAA if you need to make a move to another catcher or if someone does end up getting hurt. So, you know, that was somewhat of a surprise to make that switch and go away from a veteran like a Jacob Stallings. But so far, no harm, no foul. And Jacob Stallings, nice little career with the Rockies, ever so brief as it was. And then Zach Agnos back on the bereavement list. And Ezekiel Tovar hits the 15-day IL for the left oblique strain. That's retroactive to June 3rd. It does seem like he might end up waiting a little bit longer than the 15 days. Oblique strains are always such a hard thing. They're even harder for pitchers to deal with because of the torque that they use, which can be a lot more than a batter swinging a bat. They're both violent, right? I think swinging a bat might be a little bit more violent, but you're not doing it quite as much. So we'll wait and see when he finally returns. I think the fact that he's going to be out so long, that opens the window for Ryan Ritter to play every day at shortstop. Even though you've got other shortstop options, play Ryan Ritter every day. See what you've got, because the moves and choices and the starts, the decisions you make right now in 2025, this has always been the case. But Warren Schaefer put it out there point blank, and it's true. The Rockies need to keep this in mind. Every decision that they make in 2025 will and can have impacts on 2028, in 3 years from now. It will have that impact. And the Rockies just did not make decisions based upon that in 2021, 22, and I would even say 2023. Sure, say what you will about the trade deadline being a little bit more aggressive, but just still not enough being done. Not enough being done. Look at all of the outfield prospects on the 40-man roster when some of them are not going to contribute as much as the Rockies would like for you to believe. And so you could have done something a lot sooner and made a decision that would have been for the betterment of your future. Yeah, you're trading a prospect, which seemingly is contradictory towards improving your future, but if you know this guy just doesn't have the goods with you, you might be able to figure it out somewhere else because you traded him and gave him that boot in the butt that he needed to make those tweaks. It doesn't matter. If he is not going to figure it out with you and you've got a roster crunch on the 40-man, you can only have so many young guys. You can only have so many guys you can promote to the big leagues. Make a move. Don't let these things sort themselves out. That's what they keep saying. We're just going to let it sort itself out. You can't do that. You cannot do that any longer. So Ryan Ritter, going to get those daily starts. We'll see how many he gets this month. We'll see if it is even a month that Tovar is out. Mickey Moniak, after homering off Kodai Senga on Friday, was placed on the bereavement list. Sean Bouchard up from AAA Albuquerque. I think he got one at-bat on Saturday night. Might have made the final out, in fact. Austin Gomber, news on him. Well, he made that rehab start last Wednesday at AA. No lower than that. Went right to AA for his rehab. Four innings pitched, two hits, one run. Did not walk a batter, struck out three. 41 pitches, 29 strikes. Nice. They're lengthening him out. Schaefer did say that he would start at some point this week for AAA Albuquerque. Not sure how many more starts he's going to need. Also not sure how many starts he's made in the Arizona Complex League or on a backfield. I imagine they just did a couple simulated starts to even get Gomber up to 41 pitches at this point. So he's not going to be 100%. He might not even be, you know, at his peak value and not peak in his career. But, you know, this year he might pitch his best in mid-August because of his late start. And if he's at his best on August 15th, well, guess what? You can't trade him. So you need him to really be his best before August 15th, before July 31st, so that you could possibly move him and get some pieces going forward. I wouldn't put it past, you know, the Rockies giving him a nice little pillow contract for next season to bring him back, to give the Rockies a little bit more starting pitching depth, especially if you're going to end up trading Marquez or possibly moving on from Antonio Senzatella and just giving him his unconditional release and just paying him out next year. You're going to need more bodies, and you know, maybe Gomber is willing to sign up for one more year with the Rockies. That sort of remains to be seen. But Gomber on the comeback trail. Brandon Nimmo in the return trail, coming back to the Rocky Mountain region. He is a guy from Cheyenne, Wyoming. I think he had about 40 to 50 friends and family all 3 days in the building. And they were, I'm not going to say they were loud, but I definitely noticed them post-game, especially on Friday, going over to the Mets side of things, and then walking back to the first base side where the Rockies are, and plenty of Nimmo jerseys around, and a couple people with New York accents talking to the Nimmo family. And I could see the folks from Wyoming just laughing and getting a kick out of these, you know, aggressive but, you know, well-meaning East Coasters. It was pretty funny. Another shout out to Kevin Henry of Just Baseball. He said that one of the SNY guys, I think he's behind the scenes, said that I think it was Saturday, he made the drive with a little bit extra time from Denver to Wyoming. He rented a car in order to go to Cheyenne in order to check Wyoming off the list of states that he had been to. So that's a 4-hour round trip. And then on a Saturday, in Denver traffic, maybe it was more like 4.5, 5. But he went to Cheyenne. He said that was the quietest city he had ever been to. So, yeah, I think Cheyenne's great. I would actually like to spend a little bit more time there, in fact. We'll see if Frontier Days, I hear, can be pretty wild. Now, Rockies fans, kind of salty on Friday, a little bit Saturday, but Friday was the biggest revelation, I think, from Rockies fans. I think, you know, they had the Phillies fans in, they had the Yankees fans in, and did not want to lose the battle of the cheering in any way. And there was boos for Juan Soto. Not sure why he was the one singled out. Okay. Boos. Some folks in the press box actually thought maybe they were actually Yankees fans that were booing him. But regardless, he was booed. Then some folks were shouting, "Go back to New York," and "overrated." Tried to get that chant going. Not really sure why. Is it because Juan Soto signed a 15-year deal that's actually worth more than Dick Monfort's net worth? Perhaps. I don't know. But Soto is interesting watching him because he's very calm. And I wrote the word lackadaisical down, and that's definitely not the right word. Leisurely. He does everything leisurely, right? There was on Friday when the Mets batting practice was interrupted by rain. They had to get the tarp out, and just the crew just started disassembling the shell for the batting cage and rolling the tarp out. And yep, I guess the Mets realized, all right, I guess we're going to have to do this indoors. And they were cool about it. And I look to right field. I may have even posted this on the YouTube channel, the Rockies Insider, over on YouTube. And I pan to right field, and I was like, oh, there's still 3 Mets out there. The tarp hadn't gone over the infield yet. And this is about a good minute after everybody else is off the field. I see one of the coaches, Juan Soto, and Luis Angel Acuna, just walking in leisurely doing that. Then on Saturday, he drew a walk and took his time taking off the armor, elbow guard, shin guard, and at which point Warren Schaefer goes to walk out to the mound to change his pitcher, signals he wants Jimmy Hergett, and then Soto, so he walks over the first baseline to cross paths with Soto, and Soto turned around like he was going to go back to the dugout because we got a pitching change before realizing, oh, crap, I do actually have to touch first base. So he walked all the way back to first base, touched it, walked all the way back to the dugout, and then when it was time to go, ran out to first base to say, okay, it's time to go. And then after he struck out in the top of the eighth, wasn't paying attention to him, but he clearly took his time to get back into the dugout, grab his glove, grab his cap, and the pitcher was done with his warm-up pitches by the time Soto just started jogging past the mound to take his spot in right field. McMahon had his left foot in the batter's box, and the pitcher was looking out to right field to make sure that Soto was in his place. So I'm not going to say lackadaisical. This guy is a one-of-a-kind player. He is a great talent. He's just leisurely. And yeah, I know that might come across as bad. But I think he's saving those bullets for when he needs them. And I might rub people the wrong way, but look, I'm okay with that style of play. If you're delivering, right? Lindor did that twice where he singled in his first 2 at-bats on Saturday and then, you know, trotted crazy slow because he knew it wasn't a double or it wasn't going to be a double even if he had sprinted. Didn't need for it to be a double. So, okay, he trotted. And sometimes you can get away with stuff like that. Soto did, and I'm more okay with it than not. So I'll leave it at that. Well over 100,000 this weekend. in attendance, just under 35,000 on Friday, a little more than 38 on Saturday, and then 40,548. I was looking up some numbers. I think it was like you'd have to go back to like the last 10 Marlins games. It might have even been 12 Marlins games for them to have reached the attendance total that the Rockies did this weekend, which was just crazy. I've got so many more notes here to get to that I'm not going to do a 45-minute episode. I know you would like that. So let's go ahead and cherry pick here a couple of different things. All right, so on Friday, Schaefer was asked about Michael Tolia's progress, and Schaefer said, yeah, Tolia's in a good mental space since going to AAA. You know, a lot of guys, when they get demoted, they take that hard. They don't know how to deal with that. But apparently Tolia has been fine. You know, he's 4-for-18 in his first four games with the Isotopes, a low 6.11 OPS. So waiting to find his groove, work on a couple things. But Schaefer said, Mike's in a good spot. I expect big things from Mike. So, you know, rare case of a guy hitting 25 home runs and then going down to the minors the next year. We saw Kyle Freeland still in that wheelhouse of a great Rockies period of baseball. Fourth in Cy Young Award voting in 2018, and then 2019 needs that stint down in the minors. Daniel Bard, might have saw last week, signed a minor league deal with the Seattle Mariners. Rob Bradford broke the news. Rob Bradford from WEEI, I believe, out in Boston. Bradford and Bard are actually working on a book together that I'm really excited to read. That's, you know, certainly about Bard's career, which did get its start in Boston, but just about persevering and overcoming, because that's a story that I don't think is told that much. I think in the general sense, there's plenty of people who have overcome certain things in society, right? Certain, you know, societal things that have prevented them from being successful that they were able to persevere from. But what about just your own personal issues that you've had? Daniel Bard has had those with the yip. So I'm not sure where they're at with that. I might be catching up with Bradford here within the next month, and looking forward to hear where they're at in that progress. But Bard signs a minor league deal with the Mariners. He'll start up in about 10 days in Arizona at their spring training and Arizona Complex facility in Peoria before reporting to AAA Tacoma. Also, has got a couple opt-outs over the next couple months if, you know, he's doing his thing and the Mariners don't give him that opportunity. Okay, I can opt out and now maybe sign with somebody else. Talk about the robo-umps. A lot of ump stuff in general, because we saw the Mike Malinsky arriving late at Lone Depot Park earlier last week in that Marlins series. I talked yesterday about Willie Trainer making his MLB debut, which was really cool to see. But the ump news is robo-ump. The robo-umps are coming, and as you know, if you're listening to the Rockies Insider, robo-umps are not robo-umps. It is like instant replay just for a handful of pitches. So it's big news, but it's just not that surprising that Commissioner Manfred said that he does plan to make a proposal to MLB's competition committee to introduce automatic ball strike system into regular season games next year. Interesting that it's not, maybe not going to be postseason games. We'll see. Maybe that's a slow rollout. But it should be known that if the commissioner proposes anything to the competition committee, that gets passed, because the owner's side of the competitive bargaining agreement, right? There's the owner side / league side, and then there's the players association. The owners have it stacked so they can unilaterally do anything they want. I think it's a 9-person panel. The league's got 5, players have 3, and the umps have 1. So they all have a voice. But yeah, they're going to do whatever they want to do. So it's definitely coming. Could be some tweaks. But, you know, all the I think you guys are going to like it if you're anti-ABS, right? So actually, correction, it's 11-person committee. So it's 6 for the league. Boom. Allows them to do what they need. 5 or 4 players and then the 1 umpire. So it allows them to push through and just do whatever you want. And you know, these challenges don't delay the game, so you don't have to do the huddle and the headset. It's really quick. And if you saw it in spring training, it's great. So I think it'll be a nice addition to the game next year for sure. All right, let's get to this Giants series. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6:40, 6:40, and then 1:10 getaway on Thursday. Like kind of, I kind of like some of the storylines in general in this series for the starting pitchers. You got two young lefties on the bump Tuesday night. Tonight, Carson Palmquist against Kyle Harrison. Palmquist, 24 years old, is 0-4 with an 8.50 ERA, has taken the loss in all four of his big league starts. And then Kyle Harrison, only 23 years old, taken out of high school in that 2020 draft. He's 1-1 with a 4.31 ERA. Wednesday, two more lefties. Kyle Freeland, 32 years old, against Robbie Ray, 33 years old. They got reverse win-loss records. Kyle Freeland at 1-8 and Robbie Ray at 8-1. If you listen every day, you know that Kyle Freeland has pitched a lot better than his stat lines show. 5.19 ERA, sure. That's his earned run average, but even earned should have an asterisk next to it or have quotation marks around it, because there's a lot of predictive metrics that say his ERA should be a full run lower than what it's been. So, been a bit unlucky. We'll see if that changes with the Giants coming to town. And then Thursday, Antonio Senzatella with a 1-10 record and a 6.68 ERA against Hayden Birdsong with a 2.55 ERA. It'll be interesting to see if Ryan Rolston ends up getting the open or somebody else to just give Senzatella a little bit more of a cushion. Now, the top of the Giants order is not as potent as the top of the Mets order, and Senzatella is not facing the Giants twice in a week. But still, if you can help Senzatella have a better first inning by having him face worse hitters, and the only way you can do that is if he starts the game in the second inning or the third inning, if you want to go either multiple relievers or two innings in a row. There was something in our Sabre chat. If you don't know, I'm the vice president of the Society for American Baseball Research here in Denver. Awesome chapter that we have with some amazing baseball folks that have had all kinds of like incredibly cool jobs as baseball scouts within front offices. You know, just it's amazing the stories to hear, and everybody is so incredibly passionate. And we've got ourselves a Slack channel where we communicate and share different things. And there was actually just something posted over the weekend about, are we going to have a Rockies pitcher lose 20 games? Carl Greve, give you a shout out, buddy. Hasn't happened since Mike Moroth in 2003, and I don't think it's going to happen, simply because it's something that the Rockies can manipulate fairly easily. It's like 2 years ago. So last year, I think Tovar went over 200 strikeouts. They didn't care about it. I think McMahon did too. But in 2023, Buddy rested McMahon a good 5 or 6 games in the final 2 weeks of the season, in order to make sure that he was under that 200 strikeout threshold, because it's one of those dubious numbers you don't like to see. But I mean, come on, it's part of baseball. It is what it is. Don't try to manipulate things a little bit. And it's no harm, no foul manipulating it, but Rockies care about those kind of things, probably more than a lot of other teams do. And so how can you avoid Senzatella losing 20 games? Well, look, I just talked about Austin Gomber earlier in the show and in his return. So, you know, we'll see how much runway he gets in the starting rotation. Ryan Feltner still out on the IL waiting to get word on him. He still might be a little ways away, but he's a guy that's going to reenter the rotation. Gabriel Hughes, I expect to be in the rotation by September, maybe even sooner, as he's now in AAA. But a phantom little 15-day IL stint is a good way of trimming off a good 3 starts, let's say, from Antonio Senzatella and allowing him to, you know, finish with less than 20 losses. Yeah, Freeland and Marquez both have 8, but Marquez could end up getting traded. Freeland, again, could also go on the IL, but he's pitched way better than what he's been. With Senzatella, again, you go with the opener. Well, what if the opener gives up a run and Senzatella just is scoreless for the next 5-6 innings? All right, hey, nice job. But the Rockies don't score a run, well, then the opener gets the loss hung on them. So, again, these are things the Rockies don't want to happen, but they are certain little safety nets that they can put in place if they really feel the need to do that. So make sure you're following me on social media at Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, and the Rockies Insider channel over on YouTube for some awesome live shows, video content, one-on-one interviews with players. Lots of fun. Appreciate you dropping by and giving me this momentum. But that momentum, unfortunately, can only be as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you tomorrow.